Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we will be reviewing Spin Me Round and Day Shift. And then we're going to be discussing beasts or predators in film and television. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Rarr.
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And just so you know, Troy won't be here this week. He couldn't make it, but he is on our bad movie night if you're a Patreon fan. I do want to say before we get started that next week is our 500th episode, if you can believe it, if you can believe it. If you want to share your love or anything like that, you can email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can leave a voicemail if you'd like at 818-814-6246. It's 818-814-6246. Either one of those, and we might be mentioning those on the show. But thank you so much for everybody that's listened over the years. It's really, really cool. And we're going to have returning hosts, Scott Clark and Brian Williams, and next week is just going to be fun.
It's about time we just have fun.
Just fun. We're just going to play some games and, you know.
Brian's probably going to be drunk.
Probably.
On a Monday? Or Tuesday?
Whatever day we record.
On any day. Uh-huh. Whatever day we record.
I am seeing him on a cruise, actually, in 1 week. We are going to Alaska together to bond.
You're doing the redo of the Alaska cruise?
That's right. We're doing last year's Alaska cruise again, is what we're doing.
Hey, Aaron.
Redux.
Be careful with your phone while you're out there.
I had no problem with my phone when I was out there. It's when I came back here that I drowned it. I just didn't bother to put it on Wi-Fi before I got home. So when I killed my phone, I killed all my Alaskan pictures. Now everybody listening, collective, oh
no,
that's how I felt. Yeah, it was pretty bad. A couple things I want to mention before we get into movie and TV news. Saw X. The 10th Saw is coming next October, and I'm really hoping it ties into Fast X because that's coming next year too, and I figure, why not? Screw it. They're going to space. Might as well, you know, play a game. No? All right. I thought it'd be fun. You guys suck. All right. Well, how about this? Ezra Miller is going to therapy.
It's about time.
There you go.
I mean, he's already ruined all of our things, so why not?
Okay, I'm gonna be nice about it.
Let me read his quote. Let me give the guy a second. Let me read his quote. Having recently gone through a time of intense crisis, I now understand that I am suffering complex mental health issues and have begun ongoing treatment. I want to apologize to everyone that I have alarmed and upset with my past behavior. I am committed to doing the necessary work to get back to a healthy, safe, and productive stage in my life. Amanda, go.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that maybe he's had kind of a wake-up call to his behavior and he does realize that there's something more going on. And I really, really, really do hope that he's getting treatment because even though there are plenty of people who have laughed at his behavior and kind of what he was doing in the beginning and now it's just kind of turned into a Ezra Miller slain fest, I feel like it happens when you're in the limelight and obviously something happened with him. Something clearly was going on with him. We can all recognize that. I really just
clearly
hope that this isn't some sort of a publicity stunt where he's saying, oh, I'm suffering from a mental health illness and I want to apologize and get better. I really hope that he does mean it and takes it seriously and those around him support him because... Yeah, he's obviously going through something, so.
I don't want to equate, I mean, sure, he's going through a lot of mental health issues, sure. But, like, I think this gets something in the neighborhood of being close to being like, well, you know, Britney went kind of off the rails for a little while there because of what the paparazzi were doing and what media was doing and what everyone was doing to Britney. I don't want to equate what was happening to Britney to what was happening to Ezra because in the end, like, Britney was her own worst enemy because of what she was going through due to mental health, whereas Ezra was everybody else's worst enemy. So he was hurting a lot of people in the process of what he's doing. And this, I apologize. I feel bad for the fact that I was a monster. So I'm going to go to treatment now. I mean, He still kind of ruined a lot of my things too, so I'm mad.
I understand what Amanda's saying because I do. I mean, everything he's doing feels very well. Two things: feels schizophrenic in many ways, to some degree, or at least mental condition, but also a complete lack of accountability, a complete lack of narcissistic behavior is what it is.
Sure. Yeah.
And I want him to get help. I want everybody that has a mental condition to get help. On the same token, this feels like PR. This feels like PR. I mean, you know, Will Smith put out a video and everybody just came down on his video. This is way more PR orchestrated than that video was. You know, this is we're trying to save the Flash movie. It's no coincidence that Discovery takes over Warner Brothers and then very shortly thereafter this comes out. Now I hope it's genuine, but I'm a big fan of until I see the work put in, I'm not giving anybody a pass because of words. Ever. Never. I don't care what your words are.
Yeah.
Do the work.
Yeah.
Then we can talk.
Aaron, I love you.
Is that sarcasm? I can't tell.
He doesn't necessarily take the accountability that I think we're all expecting him to. Just putting a blanket statement out there that I am sorry to everyone that I really don't like this word, alarmed and upset. It feels like he hasn't fully understood the gravity. Yeah. He hasn't fully understood the gravity of his behavior. So I don't think he's there yet. That's why I come back to, I really, in my heart, just hope this is not a PR stunt and that even if he doesn't want to, that he is going and getting help and works through this. At the same time, what I don't think should happen, I do not think that his movie should continue to come out because it sets a damning precedent. And he hasn't worked through it to be able to, you know, there's a lot of publicity that comes with a movie's release. So
guess who's not going on Stephen Colbert?
Yeah, guess who's not going out there?
Ezra. Guess who's not going on Jimmy Kimmel? Ezra. This is all going to be Michael Keaton. It's going to be Ben Affleck. It's going to be whoever else happens to be. Jason Momoa will be in it, even if he's not in the movie. They'll just have, hey, can you go do press? Just pretend you're Ezra. Oh, sure, man.
All right, man. I got it. Okay, here we go.
On two sides of it, though, it's damning to the potential of the people around, but I also think it's damaging to him and his healing for him to then have his distraction and his focus be, well, my movie is coming out. Especially if he has, you know, it's complex mental health issues, which means that there are multiple illnesses that need to be treated. It makes it much harder and is a longer process. So I just feel like regardless of his apology and, you know, him working through it, I think the movie needs to take a different direction for foreseeable future.
$200 million, they are not going to throw that away. They are just, I can't see that happening. Everybody's still.
How much should they throw Batgirl away for?
90 million, but they've got like, they've got this accounting.
Half of it.
Yeah. Well, it's not half of it because they're going to have a lot more promotion. They're going to have a lot more invested long term in what comes out of it. But Batgirl apparently wasn't testing great either. I think this seems like it's on a more level playing field. Now, how much is true? I don't know. But I don't know. There's no right answer. There's no right answer. I guarantee he shouldn't gain success from this because based on his past behavior, I mean, Hawaii literally, I think, not literally, but figuratively. No, I think literally Hawaii put up an Ezra fence around the island. So, I mean, there's genuine concern about him coming back to the island. Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing's nuts. I don't know what they're going to do with this movie. I honestly cannot wait for this movie to come out to see how they handle it because just fascinating. There's no way he does an interview circuits. I can't see that happening, but maybe if he does the work and puts in the effort, maybe, I guess. Everybody's redeemable until they're convicted of a crime in many respects.
Yeah, this feels like this harkens back to old school Hollywood when they used to sit there and, you know, 1940s, 1950s Hollywood, a movie comes out, a movie's coming out. Let's go send Clark Gable out to the cottage so he can go fishing for a little while as we're promoting this movie or whoever else it was. Maybe it wasn't Clark Gable, but still you get the point. It was, and I was doing air quotes like you guys can actually see me do air quotes, but you can't. you know, that's what they used to do in old school Hollywood when they had an actor who was really good at doing things in the movies and really, really popular.
He's not really popular. I would like to put the kibosh on that. Ezra Miller is not really popular. He could not sell a movie on his own name. It's not like, I know a lot of people have, well, this is so similar to Will Smith. No, it's not. Will Smith is an absolute superstar, beloved by the entire world. Ezra Miller is barely known. So I just don't.
I wouldn't say he's barely known, but I would not say he's beloved. I would agree with that.
Very, very few people are going to a movie to see Ezra Miller.
No, they're going to the Flash movie.
I used to be that person.
To see Ezra Miller or to see Fantastic Beasts. There's a difference.
No. I literally was, because he was in Perks of Being a Wallflower, and that's where I saw him first.
Okay.
And I really loved him. And I think smaller there are some other youths
then.
Who maybe...
He's a smaller celebrity.
But I agree with you. I'm just saying... I don't think that he's
there's
not
zero comparison
known.
Between him and Will Smith is what I'm saying.
Like, I agree with that. I could
pull 20 people in a room, whether they're film buffs. Or, you know what? I could take 20 people that are people that love movies but don't know film. You know the difference? People, I love going to the movie, but I don't pay attention to film. You know, you ask 20 people, every one of them will know who Will Smith is. Three of them will know who Ezra Miller is, and it's mostly going to be because they saw him in those Harry Potter spinoffs. That's what I'm saying. Or maybe they saw him, you know, as Flash.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. It's a big difference. Now, I also think he's got a lot further to go to prove himself, you know, in terms of, you know, Will Smith really doesn't. I mean, he just has to come. I mean, I think he's trying to make amends with the public. He's taking time away. He's doing all of these things. Ezra's got to show that he's a different person. You know, Will Smith just has to say, basically, I was going through some stuff and. You know, here's what I was going through, and you know, me and Chris talked, whatever. But Ezra's got to show to the world that I got treatment and I'm better, and he has to be on a good path before people are gonna take risks on him again. He's not getting a $200 million movie again anytime soon.
The big difference between Will Smith and Ezra Miller, aside from their level of notoriety that you mentioned, is also their situations. Will Smith was an isolated incident, right?
Right.
Ezra Miller has been. I can't even count anymore. I don't know how many incidents there have been because there have been so many. And so it's a pattern of behavior.
There's grooming. Right. There's a cult.
But everywhere I go, like I see people making the comparisons between the two of them. And I'm just like, there's no comparison. Look, Will Smith hit us in the gut because everybody loves him and still does. It's kind of like when, you know, your parent.
Favorite uncle, like, yeah, accidentally, or somebody you... like, dips his balls in a sauce in front of you or something, right?
No.
What?
Oh, been there.
Why does your uncle dip his balls in the sauce?
Jesus. Why can't you
dip his balls in it?
Why can't you have a real conversation? What is wrong with you?
Without making it weird.
I have real conversations all day long. I don't come here for real conversations.
Let's move on. We've had enough of Ezra. Let's move on. All right. So
you're welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
You can thank me. My email, which I now check, is rjohn@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can send me like gift cards or whatever you want to that email address, because I just broke this up to the point where we're moving on. Okay.
That's a funny story.
He can't reply to you, though.
The whole reason we can now, it's all
yes,
fixed.
I can.
We had an email issue at the hoe here, and we were trying to get it figured out, and Amanda and I check our emails pretty regularly. Turns out Troy and John never have. And so sorry, fans, if you've emailed them, but now they check them pretty regularly because we got it fixed, and John was convinced that we did this just to trick him into checking his email, and I wish I would have thought of it.
Yeah, I think I had something like 10,000 emails sitting in that box when I finally did it.
Jesus.
It took 10 minutes for my computer to finally catch up on all those emails. And then I just did a select all and delete. So if you did email me in that span
send
of time,
where
you can go ahead and send it to me again. I promise I'll read it this time. But when I see 10,000 emails, yeah, it got lost.
Something's so wrong with you. Well, staying on the Hollywood apology tour, better late than never. This is, I guess, a positive story, but also kind of sad. The Academy, a.k.a. the Oscars, finally apologized to Sasheen Littlefeather for 50 years of unfair reactions to her situation. But they apologized to her from 50 years back when she was booed, accepting the Oscar for Marlon Brando. That was the first time that she encountered the Academy. It was 1973, and she was booed on stage at the Oscars, heckled with mocking and so-called tomahawk chops off stage,
yep.
And then was threatened with arrest and physical assault because she was basically just bringing attention to her culture. And they finally apologize. Long time coming. I think it's, you know, John, this really spoke to you. So are you glad they finally made amends?
I'm really glad that this is something that comes around, goes around, and this is Hollywood finally going, we made a lot of mistakes. So
this is also the John Wayne incident, right? Where they allegedly had to hold John Wayne back because he was trying to get, attacker or face her in some respect.
Right. Every single thing about this was the unfortunate times that we had then, and it's taking these crazy times we have now for us to finally sit there and say, you know, maybe we should walk that back a little bit. And I do appreciate that simple fact that they're doing this. It is a little late, though.
A little?
I mean,
it's like two generations that we got through.
Seriously, the majority of the people hearing this story weren't even alive and didn't even know that it happened.
Yeah, it's
at the same time.
Gen X, the millennials, Generation Y, I think.
Y, Z, and then we're rolling back to A, I think, before it finally comes back to the, we're
alpha.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I think it's four generations that this thing went through that for it to finally be brought up. That's kind of shitty. All right, I take it back. It's shitty.
It's really shitty. I appreciate that somebody is like going back through, because somebody had to have gone back through and said, let's find all of the really awful things that we've done and apologize for them.
I think the Will Smith thing is what brought this back to the forefront, because this really got people talking about horrible things that happened in Oscar history, and that was one of the worst. So it did some good, I guess.
You see, everybody, Will Smith is still a good guy.
He is still a good guy. He's just going through some stuff. I'm sure.
I'd be going through some stuff too if I was married to Jada.
Stop.
I mean,
we're all thinking it.
Prozac.
All right. Walmart Plus has partnered with Paramount Plus because we need more of this shit in our lives. Walmart reached a deal with Paramount Global to include the Paramount Plus streaming service as part of their giant Walmart Plus membership program starting in September. So what that means is the Paramount Plus Essential plan, which includes ads, will be available for no extra cost to Walmart Plus members. In the U.S., Paramount Plus Essential is regularly $4.99 a month. The Essential plan does not include local live CBS stations. That's only available on the premium plan, but it does provide NFL and UEFA Champions League games available via separate live feeds. So the move was done by Walmart, intended to make Walmart Plus, which launched in September 2020, more competitive with Amazon Prime by adding a streaming entertainment component. And Paramount Plus is like, well, at least somebody's paying attention to us. So what do you guys think? Do you think this is going to do anything? I mean, Walmart, I feel like, is something you don't want to just shake a stick at. I think this could rival Prime in some way, because Prime hasn't been a real competitor ever.
The thing about this that really concerns me is conglomerate corporations partnering with these streaming services, and it just feels like cable all over again, and it restricts the ability for people to have access to this content unless they pay for, you know, like if I'm not a Walmart supporter, which I'm not, I'm not going to pay for Paramount Plus because I don't want to support Walmart. And so I feel like it alienates some people, but it also gives such an upper head to these already exceedingly profitable organizations, corporations that don't have good enough working conditions, don't pay enough to their employees, et cetera, et cetera. And it just incentivizes them to continue their practices as is. They have no, you know, they're just gathering more in their wealth and in their pocket, and more people that have to report to them and align with what their values are. And so that's just something that really concerns me about this type of move with an organization this large that has nothing to do with streaming services.
Well, it does. They're trying to compete with Amazon Prime. That's the whole point. It's gonna cost $12.95 a month, $98 a year. It's gonna give subscribers same day delivery on more than 160,000 products. So, and I think
but
they can save on
gas. But what I'm saying is Walmart wasn't in the entertainment industry. It's
right,
not
they
like
were.
Paramount Plus
they
is.
Were.
They were.
Let
Voodoo.
Let me finish,
oh,
though.
Sorry. Okay.
they did not create this streaming service. Amazon created its own streaming service and partnered it with its other shipping service. Walmart is absorbing other companies essentially in its practices by having this model together. They're absorbing. They're going to have the leadership because they're the ones that are more profitable. And it gives more money and power to this already powerful organization.
It's no different than Amazon Prime. You're an Amazon fan and you still buy stuff off Amazon, am I right? Because everybody does. So what's the difference?
No, I'm saying that this company is just having more power by partnering with these other companies that is not their own. It's not their own product that they created. Amazon Prime and Amazon Video are products of Amazon, its own company. Walmart is now going to have more input and leadership over other companies because of this partnership. And it's going to impact these streaming services that have other content that is not owned by Walmart. And so it directly impacts and can impact in the future our ability to access that content on that platform, which Walmart does not own.
On that same token, what's different between that and Amazon? Amazon gets complaints about their conditions all the time. It's the same idea. It's shipping. Yeah.
Amazon has changed their conditions.
Amazon still constantly has issues. It's not any different. I mean,
it is, though. My point is that it is different because it's not, Walmart is not creating a new product. They're not creating Walmart originals on a Walmart original platform. They are partnering with Paramount Plus and saying, give us more money for this partnership, which means Paramount Plus is going to report back to Walmart and say, this partnership is working out really well. How can we make this exclusive? How can we do more together, which might isolate people from accessing this content, which is not a Walmart exclusive? Amazon Video content is Amazon created, a lot of it is Amazon exclusive content, and that platform was already theirs to begin with.
From a consumer perspective, who cares who made it? It's still available to the consumer. That's what matters. They don't care
for
where
now. My concern is the
Amazon
future.
Amazon has done this for years. All of their Amazon basics are other companies and products they've absorbed.
That's
not stuff not all of them. Some of it they made, some tech they made, you know, like they bought Ring doorbell. They bought that. Yeah. I think Echo they created and stuff like that. But this is no different than other mega corporation. I don't get the distinction. I know what you're trying to make a distinction. I don't think there is one from a consumer perspective. They're both ridiculously oversized companies that are basically going to steer the streaming market. And much like I would say Amazon is, where their Prime Video is not really talked about, I don't think Paramount Plus will be really that talked about. I don't think they're huge selling points. They're just a bonus to the consumer. They want the shipping because that's where they get people stuck on their products.
I historically hate Walmart. If you try to tell me, okay, well, we got it, you just got to go to a Walmart and get it, I don't need it.
Except for their aspirin, because it's like $4 for like 200 Excedrin pills, generic. I like that deal. I'm a big fan.
I hate everything about Walmart. Whether or not they're doing this whole thing where they partner up Paramount Plus, I still wouldn't pay for Walmart just to get a better price than Paramount Plus, which I'm already paying for through Amazon. So it's his own little thing. This is something that would never get me to sign up for Walmart. I hope that whoever you are listening out there, do not sign up for Walmart. It's not that much better than Amazon, but at least it's not Walmart.
Well, you two really hate Walmart, like with a passion.
So I have a story about Walmart. I have a story about Walmart. So, and this is why because I used to work for Sam's Club at one point in time in my life, which Sam's Club was a fine place to work. They actually paid people well. It was a fun job. If you like walking into some place and buying big Kirkland branded crap, or, you know, a giant tub of peanut butter like I like to buy, I mean, you got it all.
Can we get to the story? We're waiting for the story. It's a movie and TV podcast. Nobody cares about Sam's Club. Let's go.
So one Thanksgiving, my wife and I finish up all of our cooking and we decide we're going to go to Walmart just to see if there's anything we can get that we hadn't already thought of for Thanksgiving. Because we had nothing else better to do and we had a couple hours before everyone
showed
up.
You're still filling in details. Nobody cares. Let's move this story along.
So we're going, we're at Walmart and we're walking through and you got the pallets of stuff for Black Friday. Friday, and people are being paid to just do nothing but stand by these pallets for Black Friday. That's all their job was for the day.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, well, that's nice. At least they're paying them extra for this. And so that's great. So we go to leave the store and there's a bin out by the door of the store that says, hey, some of our employees cannot afford a nice Thanksgiving. Please feel free in donating to them. And that upset me because though it is something that's sweet and thoughtful, the fact that the company identifies, you know, that their employees can afford a nice Thanksgiving, but instead of paying them, they want us who just gave them money to give away stuff to their employees to have a nice Thanksgiving.
I feel like you described every corporation in America.
Yeah, but not every corporation puts a big sign at the door as you're leaving to make you feel bad about it.
That's fair. Well, why would you feel bad about it? I mean, you didn't. It's not your responsibility.
I'm still scarred.
I mean, technically, it's kind of on you because you showed up when Black Friday was going on, right?
Yeah.
So you're part of the reason they had to be there.
Well, it wasn't even Black Friday. It was still Thanksgiving. It was Thanksgiving Day.
You're definitely part of the problem because you had to be there in Thanksgiving. Why do you need to shop on Thanksgiving and let them have the day off? But you can't because people still go to the store. It's a vicious circle, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
a vicious circle.
And we never want to take ownership.
And I haven't set foot in Walmart ever during Thanksgiving ever since.
Well, good. At least you took a stand.
Did.
I wish the rest of them would stop going. And I especially on Black Friday, because then it makes it easier for me to get through it. Just kidding. I shop online. I shop on Amazon.
You don't want their Vizio TV?
I don't. No, I don't. Those things are garbage. Well, okay. So moving on. The first project for Warner Brothers Discovery, I guess they have something going on. They're teaming up Robert De Niro and Barry Levinson in a film called Wise Guys, which is going to be centered on Vito Genovese and Frank Costello, two Italian-American crime bosses that ran their respective families in the middle of the 20th century. In 1957, Genovese attempted to assassinate Costello, but failed, although he was wounded and decided to retire, as much as one can retire from the mafia. And apparently, De Niro is going to play both characters. So, that's interesting.
Is one going to be a fat guy and the other one not going to be a fat guy? Is that how they're going to do it?
Why are we fat shaming?
What?
I'm not fat shaming.
Let him
I'm
eat his
saying.
McDonald's.
He's just saying, how is he going to look different? What's the separation going to be? I mean,
one's going to have an accent. One's not. He's going to sound like a regular old American. And then the other one's going to sound like Robert De Niro.
He's going to be like, you talking to me? And he's going to be like, you talking to me?
Yes, I'm like talking that. To you.
Yeah. And it's going to be him and talking to himself. It's so meta. This is a weird one that this is their first project that they've got out of the gate is for Warner Brothers Discovery is this. I mean, because Robert De Niro hasn't made enough Goodfella-ish films.
Look, once he's finally made the perfect one, he's going to retire.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, with that, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider. It's a private group. You have to look for it. And we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Also, Patreon. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to a lot of bonus content, including our Bad Movie Night. Now, we have a public Bad Movie Night, which you can go listen to right now if you want. Look for the Hollywood Outsider Presents Bad Movie Night. You can put that in your podcast feed and you'll hear past Patreon episodes. But if you want new and uncut, unedited completely, then you have to go to Patreon. So that's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Uncharted is coming out very soon. So you'll be able to hear that soon. Now let's go to some spoiler free reviews. And first up we have Spin Me Round, which comes out on video on demand the 19th.
Spin me round, you spin me
right round, baby, right round. No lie, I sang it to myself in the freaking theater.
When the manager of an Italian restaurant chain wins the opportunity to attend the franchise's educational immersion program in Italy, this must be Olive Garden, what she thought would be romantic getaway devolves into chaos and catastrophe. It has Alison Brie and Aubrey Plaza. Please tell me more.
It is totally a knockoff of Olive Garden, by the way.
Is it really?
100%.
It's amazing.
100%. This is a hard one because I love Alison Brie and Aubrey Plaza. Aubrey Plaza is barely in the movie. She's maybe 15 minutes of
screen time. That's already taken like 3 points off the score.
It really did, because there's a moment where she isn't in the movie and then she never comes back. And it's...
Oh, no.
Isn't it kind of sad? Well, her character, it's explained. It's not like she dies
I know,
tragically.
But it's still sad when you're just like, oh,
it
goodbye.
Is. And I'm not saying that to spoil something. I'm just saying that because... It legitimately affected my enjoyment of the movie because she was great every time she was on screen, and then that character kind of goes away and I'm like, I don't know what this movie is trying to do anymore. And I really didn't. Alison Brie is a manager who qualifies for this fantastic opportunity to go to Italy, and she's in this ridiculous course when she gets there where it's like they don't even want her to enjoy Italy. It's just to say that they did this thing, and then they're basically doing all these classes that kind of suck. And so she finally breaks away because the owner of this restaurant chain takes a liking to her. And then she starts seeing that other people are kind of disappearing. So is there more to this situation that she knows? What is going on? And Aubrey Plaza plays the assistant to the owner. And it's really just her kind of opening up and exploring her own inhibitions and kind of challenging herself. And then there's a lot of really interesting character moments, especially between her and Aubrey Plaza. And Molly Shannon's here, by the way, also is just one of the weird people that are there. But then at about the halfway point, Aubrey Plaza's character, like I said, leaves. And then it feels like the movie completely doesn't know what story it wants to tell anymore. It's very much, it becomes about what is going on with, you know, all these women at this retreat and the owner and what kind of guy is he? And is he kind of duplicitous, or is he just a pervy guy? Like, what kind of guy is he? But then the movie just becomes something that doesn't make any sense in terms of, I feel like we're not going anywhere interesting for a long period of time. So I was really into the movie, and then I got to about the halfway point and I'm just like, you kind of lost me a little bit. And a big portion of that, or big reason for that, is Aubrey Plaza is no longer in it. And she really kind of kept things engaging. And I think other than Alison Brie, the other characters aren't as interesting. And that kind of hinders your enjoyment a little bit.
That did not spin you right round, baby, right round.
Wow. No, it did not.
What is the score that you're giving Spin Me Round?
I give it 550. I enjoyed the film overall. It's just I really was kind of in love with it for the first half. And then
that's a bummer.
Just liked it by the end. So it's very average. Okay. Now we're going to Day Shift. Now, this is Jamie Foxx as a hardworking blue-collar dad who just wants to provide a good life for his quick-witted 8-year-old daughter. His mundane San Fernando Valley pool cleaning job is really a front for his real source of income, hunting and killing vampires. Now, this is a really, really cool concept because the idea is he goes out, he kills them, and he's like Dog the Bounty Hunter. He gets the teeth, he takes the teeth back, and that's what he gets paid on. They even have a union. Snoop Dogg is a badass vampire killer. I don't know why, but he is, and it works. He's got a cool cowboy hat and a trench coat. Dave Franco is in the film as, an accountant. He's basically he's the guy that's got to make sure Jamie Foxx is doing his job. And it ends up just turning into chaos because one of the vampires that Jamie Foxx kills is attached to a lead vampire that then becomes consumed with taking out everything that Jamie Foxx's character stands for. So, John, that is Night Shift in all its glory, I guess. Mm-hmm, is how I wanna,
that sounds right.
Yeah. I want to know what you thought about this, because this is kind of a comedy, also action-filled. Like, what part of this, and Jamie Foxx's character's Bud Jablonski, by the way, his wife is Megan Good. I love Megan Good.
Yeah.
So what did you think?
There was a lot of that in this.
What did you think about Day Shift and Jamie Foxx out here having fun with Dan Franco killing vampires?
If you want something that is like one of these awesome vampire stories that has some sort of like stakes to it that makes some sort of sense.
Stakes to it. You didn't mean to.
I didn't mean to, but I'm going to go with it. This is not the movie for you, but if you want a great action comedy and with a little bit of a horror twist to it, then this is the kind of the movie for you. Jamie Foxx, you really can't miss with Jamie Foxx. Even in Spider-Man, whichever one he was in, he's still good. That's right, I said it. Anyhow, you really can't miss with him in this. He's strong, he's funny, he's engaging, he's just an awesome all-around character, and the amount of action they put him through is a lot of fun. And then you got Dave Franco who decides to be like the straight man, but not the straight man. He's also the Joker, not really the Joker, but he's also like the guy who does all the pratfalls, but yet he does it so well. And you sit there and you think, well, it's Dave Franco. They're going to start making him be a little bit more serious or give him something to kind of shine with. And they did. And it's really making him the butt of a joke most of the time.
Yeah, he is kind of the butt of the joke. But it is very much a fun, just zippy action comedy with great – I want to talk about the action. Because
yeah, let's do it.
And this is a Netflix movie. If I didn't say that, it's a Netflix movie, so you can watch it on Netflix right now. But the director, J.J. Perry, has a lot of action. There's a lot of drone footage. There's a whole car chase that is completely done by drone footage. I know you love drones. Were you a big fan of...
I mentioned this in watching Ambulance. There's actually some drone footage there. And then there's actually in Gray Man, there's some drone footage there in Gray Man as well, where they've managed to take, and this isn't, when we say drone footage, we're not talking about your DJI highly, highly specialized drones where anyone can fly it and control it. You've actually got a pilot operator who's flying this, who's piloting it from inside the drone technically, because he's got a video feed that he's watching. And the drone itself, the camera on top of it is stationary.
Mm-hmm.
I always identify when these shots are happening as I started seeing them, because the field of view is always a little bit higher on the screen. So when you're thinking about shooting composition, you're thinking about the three-quarter rule. So it's got to land firmly in one of the quarters when it comes to composition. And the way you can capture action with these is pretty incredible. When the cars in this are coming around the corner, the drone's coming through some trees and then comes down to the car level, then flips around to the behind it to start chasing the cars, and then it starts creeping back, so it takes more and more of the cars that are behind this car that are following it. Like, there's a lot of things that goes into this, and it's just so well done, and it gives you a feel of action in one take or one with as few cuts as possible that you can't do any other way.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome that you love that. I love the fight scenes, the actual fight scenes, like hand-to-hand combat, the vampire kills. There's camera movements flying all over the place. I mean, they're doing some Matrix shit. It's honestly just nonstop fun, ridiculous. None of the plot makes any damn sense, and I'm okay with all of it. I mean, it makes sense, but
it doesn't matter.
I don't care. It's just fun. Right. Most vampire movies are ridiculous, and I could pick them apart if I really wanted to. But this is just really enjoyable in terms of the action. The comedy is fairly spot on. Jamie Foxx the guy is nonstop energy and enjoyment at all times. And he can carry a film. And I actually thought Snoop Dogg was pretty good.
Snoop Dogg was great.
Made him a badass. Who saw that coming? You know?
Yeah. They did make him a total badass. The thing that I really loved about the action, like the way they treated the vampires as if they were... It was like they were made of air, like as far as how they're moving, how they took damage, like, or how their bodies just contorted to punches and everything. It was like dealing with something that was made of air, and it was very cool to see. And compositionally, the way they played it out was fun to watch.
So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Day Shift?
I actually give this $7.
All right. I give it $6 because, I mean, I can't not knock it for story, but, and I do think like there's definitely a lot of ridiculous moments, but I had a fun time the whole time.
Yeah.
I enjoyed
it is definitely something that is great. And if you have a chance to sit down with a bunch of friends,
it's good.
It's good. Anyhow, if you have a chance to sit down with a bunch of friends and watch something that's just a very high energy and fun, this is probably a good movie for that.
All right. Any other recent film or TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about? Amanda, you've had to be quiet for a little bit. So what do you got?
I do have a couple. The first that I watched is called 5 Days at Memorial, which is on Apple TV Plus. The first three episodes are. This is a limited series that is following a group of healthcare providers at this hospital during Hurricane Katrina. And there's like 45 individuals who end up going missing. And so it's trying to capture everything that they had to go through during this and give you some insight into Hurricane Katrina, because we have to also recall that there are people who are younger who don't even know about the details of this, but also what happened to those people. And so it stars Vera Farmiga. She's amazing as always. So far, I'm really enjoying it. So I would recommend checking it out. I can't believe I have a good recommendation for Apple TV, but I'm pulling a Troy. And so go watch it.
That's funny.
The other one is A League of Their Own. Woo-hoo! Oh, shout out to the Rockford Peaches.
How is that? That's my hometown.
Super gay, super gay. And I mean that in the best of ways. I did not realize how far into the lesbianness that they were going to go into the show. But
really,
fair warning. Yeah, there's some intensity in these sexual tensions among the team members, which is, if you're not aware, is actually very authentic. That's very real. That stuff really happens and it's very sheltered.
You mean women lay down with other women? I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
One thing that I'll say about this, if you've seen the original movie, which was loosely adapted from the real life events of the Rockford Peaches, this is even more loosely based on those events. And so one of the things that you'll probably notice the most is that this is set in the 1940s. When these events actually occurred, and it's essentially a group of women who are given the opportunity to become professional baseball players in the All-American League. And they come together and all of this great stuff happens. But in the show, there's a black female character who is unable to even try out for the team. She's very isolated. She's not able to participate. She's from Rockford, Illinois, which is Aaron and I's hometown. So again, shout out to this show. Yeah, I love it.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And so you may be sitting there thinking, well, this isn't really what happened, because part of this is based on true events. But the creators of the show and the writers of the show actually talked about how they wanted to create an opportunity where there was more opportunity for both women and black individuals to be included into the story, because they weren't able to be included in pretty much any capacity back in the 40s because of segregation. And so although that's not really what was happening in the 40s, they created this semi-fantasy world, alternative reality, if you will, where they were still combating racism and segregation, but it's almost like they were kind of at the forefront of trying to push through those barriers. And so I really liked that they made those adjustments and created a story where people who were unaware of this reality that existed not that long ago, what it was like, and also, you know, kind of created a space for inclusivity of these black actors. So I really liked that part of it. But I think it's unique that they did that.
Excellent. I do want to check that out. I do. I will segue to Disney Plus has Bear Grylls Running Wild the Challenge, which I've watched all of them already. So all the people saying, well, you got to watch this show. Yeah, Bear Grylls always wins. So I love survival shows like Alone, which I've talked about before. But Bear Grylls is my favorite guy to watch in these scenarios, because he really has a great way of both showing survival skills, teaching you something so you can actually take something away from it, as well as he has celebrities on each one of his adventures. Basically, he takes a celebrity on a 2-day adventure and he teaches them how to survive in some way, or how to use some aspect of something to survive. And they're very, very tough challenges for this particular season. This is the first time he's done this. And I mean, all of the actors or celebrities that he has on are really engaging and interesting. He has this season, he has Florence Pugh, he has Simu Liu, which he has the toughest of all the challenges, by the way. He's got an Arctic one, which is really, really, really tough. And you've got Natalie Portman there, and Anthony Anderson is in there. I mean, there's just some really, really fun celebrity guests on those. So if you like outdoors, you like celebrity challenges, like that kind of thing. If you're a reality TV person, I guess. I don't like much reality TV, but I really love that show. It's on Disney Plus. Literally the first time I've turned Disney Plus on or activated the streaming channel in forever. So I'm glad that was there. Also, I watched Trainwreck, Woodstock 99 on Netflix. That is a great documentary if you never want to go to a music festival, because it's exactly why I never go to a music festival. Yep.
It's making me a little anxious for When We Were Young. If you've heard about that festival that's happening in Vegas, it's basically an emo fest from the early 2000s. They're bringing all these bands back together. And it's making me so nervous because I just saw the conditions. But that, I didn't realize how bad Woodstock 99 was until I watched that docuseries. And holy shit, it was bad. It was real bad.
Yeah.
Embarrassing. And the people who ran it are still not taking accountability
for their
failures.
I know a lot of people are going to blame them and stuff, but I'll blame the people too. It's everybody's fault. This whole thing was everybody's fault. I don't feel bad for anybody involved in that festival or that attended that festival. I just don't. I feel bad for the town.
Well, I feel bad for the people who didn't do anything.
You were there. Leave. There's your solution.
Well, people did leave.
No. But. Well, then they escaped all the madness, so they're fine. But the people that complained and stayed through the whole thing, I feel zero empathy for you. I just don't.
Yeah, I remember watching that happen on TV back when MTV still played music, and they were showing some of the stuff from Woodstock 99 happening. And I'm like, I am never doing anything like that at all.
Yeah, exactly. This documentary reminds you.
I've been to music festivals, and a lot of them aren't like that. But I think that Woodstock 99 had to have been a huge lesson for others to learn from.
Yeah. Don't give the mic to Limp Bizkit. That's what I learned.
You know, everybody said Fred Durst was an asshole the whole time, and I didn't understand why people thought he was an asshole, because I loved Limp Bizkit when I was younger. But now I understand. Now I really understand. Yeah.
He did everything he could to get people riled up, boy. Oh, that's fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, this was an era of anarchy. What did you expect?
So was the 60s. So was the original Woodstock. That's no excuse.
It's not necessarily the era of anarchy. It was the era of extreme. Everything had to be extreme.
That's probably, I would maybe agree. Well, I mean, that's kind of the same thing, isn't it? They're both.
These bands are anarchy, though. They're against the government, and they're against rules and regulations. And
but hippies
unfortunately,
love,
when you have these
they
bros,
wanted to love. The people at Woodstock just wanted to rage against everything. I don't feel sorry for anybody that was there. I just don't.
It was a bunch of bro dogs destroying everything.
All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Predators and Beasts in Entertainment. Get it? That's because the Beast movie is coming out? Yeah. So, not just The Predator, even though Prey, great movie. If you haven't seen it, great movie.
Oh my God. Love that movie.
Good. So good. I just want to aside. They have a Comanche track for the film, which is really interesting. I think everybody should at least check it out. I don't know how you feel about dubbing and whatnot, but it's basically the whole film is in Comanche because they're obviously Comanche. It takes place in the Great Plains in the 1700s as a predator attacks. And it's a great way to listen to it. But some people are saying, well, that's the way it was intended. No, it was pitched that way. The studio greenlit it as an English-speaking movie. So the way it was intended is the way that you would watch it. So just to clarify, because I had a couple cinephiles throw that at me, and I'm just like, that's not the... Intended means how it was filmed, and it was filmed the way it was filmed. But the track is a great addition, and I think it should be... Everybody should check it out. That said, great movie. Love the dog. Dog. But anyway, back to Beasts and Predators in Entertainment. Hunting down our heroes, right? They can be directly or indirectly. When you're thinking predators that we're talking about here, it's like Jaws. It's Cujo. It's Anaconda. It's Meg. It's a predator. Predator would count. The Thing, Alien, those kinds of things, right? So let's start with Jaws, just so we don't end up only talking about that one. I kind of want to get Jaws out of the way, and then we never refer to it again. in the conversation. So Jaws is easily the defining Predator-esque movie. It's the biggest movie beast in history, and it's also one of the horror movies that people compare to every other horror movie. I mean, it's one of the best done films of all genres. And for whatever reason, that shark, when it came out, terrified people, terrified them. Came out in 1975. It's almost 50 freaking years old. It still terrifies people to this day. There are still people that are terrified to get in the water because of that movie. Why do you think Jaws still resonates?
Part of it is because of the reality of these, what can be vicious creatures that live in the water. But the other part of it is that this specific shark had almost like an intelligence and drive to it. It was seeking people out. It was, I'm going to come get you, your mother, your brother, your father, your priest. I'm going to get everybody you've ever loved and cared about. And that is, I think, what differentiated sharks before and after Jaws, is that it became more than just the physical fear. It was the psychological fear of this thing having the intelligence and capability of hunting you down, and you being more than just food in the water. You're, I don't know, you're a victim of it. And so that is, I think, perpetuated years over years, because now people see that and they're like, I don't want that to be me. And we don't really know that much about what lurks in the ocean. Even if it's not a shark, it could be something else.
I know sharks lurk in the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. That's a good enough reason for me to not go in.
They're definitely in there. So the thing I think about when it comes to why sharks resonate is because there's still nightmares people have about sharks. There's still stories. The Shark Week on Discovery Channel is one of the most popular things that that Discovery does.
Oh, it's crazy, man. My best friend literally doesn't even watch television. And every single time Shark Week comes on, he's just won't stop talking about it. I'm like, it's literally just the episodes of sharks, the same goddamn shark doing the same thing. It's insane.
B-roll of shark here, B-roll of shark there. Oh, look, they found a Meg. They found a Meg 1 year.
Was Jason Statham the guy that found it?
Right.
Hey, look, yeah. I found a Mike.
And I think one of the reasons why it resonates with people so much is that they are very much a predator that can take us. No matter, like, as if we live in a coastal town, which is a good amount of towns out there, they can take us whenever they want. And you'll be swimming with little Bobby, and Bobby's sitting there like, hey, look, let's go, boop, and he's gone. That's it. He's just gone. And that's scarier than anything else. I'll give you some stats. Ooh. Just this year, we're 8 months into this year. There have been 57 shark attacks this year. 57. Now, I know, not that big of a number when you compare it to some of the other things out there in the world, but still, 10 of those.
It's big when you're starting to think about your feet and your legs and your arms.
Yeah. 10 of those attacks were provoked, which means that some dipshit was out there mouthing off to a shark, and the shark said, okay, I'm going to eat you. And then
do not think that's what provoked attacks mean.
Oh, no.
Although it would be amazing.
I love the idea of back talking a shark, though. Yeah. Like, you're not going to get me. No, 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 no.
Yeah, exactly. And there's been 6 fatalities. And I since I wrote down all these facts, which was on Sunday, just yesterday, that some poor kid in the Keys who was on vacation just had to have part of his foot amputated because of a shark bite. So, and he was 10 years old.
Oh my God.
So, like,
I was going to ask, how many of these come from Florida alone? Because I feel like Florida, there's a town there, a body of water where it's the shark bite capital of the world.
Didn't you guys used to vacation there?
Yeah.
We did. I saw a shark there, John. I saw the fin. And
did you jump in?
Yeah.
I was already in the water. We swam really fast.
In Sarasota, we get all sorts of sharks out there. But like, I remember being out at the beach and like dolphins were swimming by, and we were pretty sure there were dolphins. It was so quick that like it was cute. But like this little kid goes, it's either a shark or a dolphin. Wait here, I'm gonna go find out. And he's hauling ass into the water.
I miss him. I kind of admire and, that, though. Like, really. Yeah,
natural selection.
It was cute. It was natural selection at its best. And yet the parents of this kid are sitting there like, this beverage is really good. Can you pass me the suntan lotion? Okay, great. And they're just not even giving a damn.
Did the child survive? I kind of was it a shark? Was it a dolphin?
He eventually came back. When I say it was like a child, he's 6, maybe 7.
Oh my god! Aww,
he doesn't know any better.
This poor
kid.
He doesn't know any better. His parents don't care about him, though.
Oh my god! Are you done with your stats before I speak? I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm all done with stats.
Okay. I remember seeing Jaws as a child, and that was the first horror movie I think I ever saw. I think it was. I think Jaws was the first horror movie I ever saw. My mom took me to a theater. I remember it was a Bergner's. It was right next to a Bergner's. That's how I remember it. If anybody remembers that store, I don't know if it's still around or not.
I don't even know what that is.
It's not around. I don't think it's around anymore, but they did have some good stuff there.
I didn't actually shop there. I just had a theater next to it. So we went to this theater
like sandwiches,
and saw Jaws. And I was absolutely terrified. Absolutely terrified. And then I think, I don't remember how old I was. It was definitely a reissue. I mean, it was, you know, they used to have re-releases all the time. And it was probably the 80s I saw this. And then it was probably that year or the next year, because I knew it was very close to when I saw this movie. We go on vacation to Florida thinking, my mom's thinking, you're going to have a great time. And we were poor. So this was a magical time. It was supposed to be. And she took me to a beach because she loves the beach. And I refused to go anywhere near the water. I didn't want to even think about the water. All I knew is that right out there is Bruce. And Bruce is just waiting for me to get in so he can snack on my ankles. And it took a long time for me to get over that. I mean, now I'll get in the ocean pretty openly. I mean, I joined the Navy at one point. So I got over it years ago. But I still was pretty terrified for a long period of time because of that movie. And I still know people to this day that won't go in the ocean because of that movie. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you don't really see the shark for most of the movie, which I think really gets to our subconscious. Because most of the attacks for the first, two-thirds of the film, you don't see the shark at all, or barely, which is exactly what you see when you're in the ocean. So subconsciously, I think Spielberg, and I know it was because of, you know, malfunctioning shark most of the time, but because he masterfully shot this film, subconsciously it works on such a level that when we're in the ocean, we see the water as we saw it in Jaws, and we know that there could be that shark under there because we can't see below our knee or whatever it is. It's really fascinating because not many films terrify to that level. Not many films terrify to that level. It's kind of phenomenal when you think about it. Ugh, I kind of don't want to get back in the ocean now anytime soon. Man, did I talk about that. Although I really can't wait for the IMAX re-release of that. I hope I can see that because it's going to be in 3D.
Yeah, anyway. That'll be cool.
All right. So any more thoughts on Jaws before we move on?
Nope.
Okay. So let's talk outside of Jaws. Now, first, I want to know, are there any beasties or predators that did nothing for you? As in, they should have scared you silly, but you got nothing. Maybe even laughed at him.
The one I think about the most when it comes to this is Anaconda. I don't know. I don't know if it was John Voight's accent or how just over the top and ridiculous it was, or if it was just the fact that at some point the Anaconda roars. Yeah. Like, all these things, I've seen some big ass snakes, and I've never seen them move like this anaconda was, because they just don't. So that's the one that really didn't do anything for me.
It screams, John. It literally screams.
Yes.
Well, that's actually not the sound it makes. That was really bad, but you get the idea. It screams. Amanda, anything that terrified, or you were supposed to be terrified of, but you couldn't stop laughing about it, or just didn't do anything for you?
Yeah, and I feel like I'm probably going to get a little bit of feedback for this one. So that's Amanda at thehollywoodoutsider.com. It could have been because I, you know, I'm younger, so I saw this later from when they were released, but both Tremors and The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
What kind of feedback are going to get for those? Those are two perfectly good examples.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I don't think the worm is terrifying.
it's like coveted that you're like, you can't talk bad about those movies. And I'm not trying to say they're bad, but like the creatures are laughable.
I'm sorry. You're right. I'm wrong. Those are bad movies to choose.
No, they're not. No, they're not. Neither one of those films have a creature that's actually terrifying. I know The Creature from the Black Lagoon is supposed to be totally with you, Amanda. I think it does nothing. Yeah. It's kind of hard to not laugh at it. And I mean, Tremors, it's a worm. What's terrifying? It's a great movie, but it's not terrifying.
Right. It's not, they're not knocks on the movies, just the creatures.
Yeah, I get totally understood.
Well, I mean, those worms move pretty fast, and they've got like multiple little hands that come out of its face that can grab onto you.
Graboids.
And a mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a big ass mouth. I mean, that's, these are all scary things.
If only it
looked
scary.
Yeah, but it just didn't come to fruition the right way.
Uh-uh.
All right, I'll give it to you.
Hit the wall, though. Hit the wall the right way. Splat.
Took a dive into the canyon.
Ha, ha, ha.
Stampede!
Fuck you. The Blob. I'll tell you right now, The Blob is the dumbest thing. I've never ever been terrified of it. I don't understand
100%.
It. And I'm just like, is it a predator? Is it a beast? I don't know what it is. It's a blob, but it does nothing for me.
I've never been afraid of a jelly sandwich.
Right. Cue the Winged Serpent. That,
what is that?
That was
okay.
Did you see it, Amanda?
Yes.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. It's from, I want to say 1983, I think. It's this serpent that's hiding out in the top of a building, and it's a dragonish thing, but it's not at all. I mean, how would you describe it? I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It's just really cheesy, and it looks.
It is. I feel like it's trying to be like a bat dinosaur slash, I don't know. It just doesn't come out right. I liked the way you described it. I feel like that's probably the best you're going to get.
1982 is when it came out.
Look at that cast. I mean, how do you mess up in 1982 with that cast?
It was directed by Larry Cohen. That's how you do it.
Never mind.
It was really cheesy. And I mean, it's basically this whole movie. It's kind of playing a little like Jaws because you don't see the monster. But then when you do, it's just like, what is happening? This is really bad. So it should have been a terrifying monster, but when you actually see it, it is not at any point.
It almost kind of looks cute.
No, it looks which is
like I would pet it.
Well, then you'd lose some fingers probably. All right, so let's switch gears. Which predators or beasts have you been terrified of over the years? Like, I mean legitimately terrified. Like, you got scared. Don't do the, well, you kind of had a creepy look, but not really. No, like, you were scared.
So the one that comes to mind first and foremost is eight-legged freaks.
Not arachnophobia, but eight-legged freaks.
Eight-legged freaks.
Oh my God.
I know. I'm laughing because I know how ridiculous it sounds, that's my number one choice. But there's just, I've had arachnophobia since I was very, very young. It all started with Mr. Johnson in my fifth grade classroom. He really set things in motion for me when he told me about how many you eat in a year while you're sleeping. And then, you know, they dropped from the attic on my foot and things just spiraled from there. And then I saw eight-legged freaks. And I think part of it was that David Arquette, he's in that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I loved him. And he was just Dewey to me at that point. And
he's Dewey in the movie. He is Dewey in the movie.
So it's not, he's Dewey in the movie. Yeah, that's fair. And so I'm sitting here like thinking that this isn't going to be bad. But for some reason, my little youthful brain is like, imagine if there were big spiders that could literally like step on you and eat your head off and do all these terrible things because they're so big. Like, everyone tells you it's just a little spider. Well, what if it wasn't a little spider? Because I'm scared of the little ones, too. So it went into my deepest fears as a person and just took them all out. And I don't know why that movie had such an impact, but
wow.
Yeah, it really did it.
Of all the things I thought we would talk about today, I did not see that one coming. Yeah.
Yeah, that's... That one's hard to sit there and look at and be like, that's scary. Cause like, I get it. Spiders are scary things, but that movie never plays them for fear. It always plays them for comedy.
It's almost like Starship Troopers.
Also, remember, though, I was a child.
No, I was young when I saw that. What I think is important is that
you got therapy.
I
did get therapy.
Right.
I've got one that isn't scary at all either, and it's because I saw it when I was a kid. So I get it.
The other one that I think is legitimate, though, is Piranha.
Oh, God, that scared the shit out of me as a kid. Yeah, that scared the shit out of me as a kid.
Yeah.
I assume...
Even the 3D one.
So yours are the more recent ones. I'm thinking the really, like, the
no,
late
no, no.
70s.
I'm saying, like, Piranha, yes, the old Piranha, but also even the newer ones, scared me. Because I think it's that same core fear, you know, from Jaws, where it's like, this could really happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then... In the newer one, you had a woman and she had like her breasts attacked. And I was like, God, that would really hurt. And so it kind of tapped into another fear of mine where it's like, I can't even imagine if they went after my body parts, like as a female, like they're sexualized, they're sexualized creatures.
Where'd my nipple go? Ah!
I don't know what to say. I mean, in that movie that you're describing, there's actually a part where there's a penis floating in the water and a fish eats it.
I kind of want to watch that again. I haven't seen that. The original Piranha, I thought it was terrifying. But the 3D one, I was laughing.
It truly is.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 3D one is more comedic and it's almost like a parody. That's why I had to specify, like, even that one gets me.
I mean, but I get it. I mean, Piranha are, even though, wasn't that one, they were in a lake or something? I'm like, what? Piranha are in a lake? I felt like that was a little weird, but I could be wrong because I don't think the plot was an important part of that film.
No, it never is. Mm-mm. No. The poster, I'm pretty sure, implies that it's hardly about the creatures.
Yeah. They had a lot of nudity in that 3D one.
Kelly Brook was in that 3D one.
Cool.
You knew that off the top of your head.
That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had a crush on her back then.
Aw. So any other ones, Amanda?
Well, does Jurassic Park count?
If it scared you.
Are we counting?
If it scared you.
Yeah. I mean, the OGs, those are, I don't know. I have a story to share that I'll talk about Jurassic Park more later on. But I think a lot of people were truly traumatized when they saw Jurassic World younger. And when you saw the original Jurassic Parks, and I just have recently been rewatching some of them, and you realize how vicious those creatures were in the movies, and your little youthful brain is sitting there trying to comprehend how cute little dinosaurs from, oh God, what was that adorable movie? Land of Time.
Oh, yeah.
How they could go from being so cute and adorable to being such, like, they will decapitate you. And it's just happening. And so that really scared me, I think, partly because of that transition where I'm seeing one aspect, the good aspect of dinosaurs, to seeing the bad aspect of them. And knowing that they're real creatures, that they are capable of doing this, were capable of doing this damage, and that someone is stupid enough to try to bring that back to society.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, like in the past week on Twitter, I saw that someone's trying to bring this to reality. It just makes it all the more scary.
Well, the Velociraptors really scared me when it first came out. I mean, I thought they were unnerved. They unnerved me. Mm-hmm. Like, they were kind of terrifying creatures, the first one, because they had that stupid fingernail and the claw. But, yeah, they just tap, 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 tap whenever they were attacking. It was pretty, and they're so fast and quick. Ugh, yeah.
Also, and I don't mean to kind of backtrack a little bit, but I do have to say this. One of my favorite 80s movies is Gremlins, and I feel like the Gremlins count.
Absolutely, and Gremlins count, yeah.
They, to me, so I loved Furbies, so I always saw them as like just a hangry Furby, so they never scared me. I always thought that they were super cute, and I know the intention was for them to be very scary when they're not cute anymore, but I still thought that they were adorable. Just needed to be fed a little bit more.
Just not after midnight.
Just not after midnight.
Right. What about you, John? Which ones actually terrified you?
Oh, the first one that came to mind was Silver Bullet, the werewolf of Silver Bullet.
100%.
That's terrified. A great choice.
Oh, my God. Hee-haw! Hee-haw! He always called me that.
I don't know what it is about that werewolf. It's not one of the best. It's not one of the best werewolves ever done.
It's actually not even a good werewolf for that time.
But it really wasn't. It does still work. Like, I would say if you're looking for a great werewolf for that time, American Werewolf in London is the hardest one to beat. But you know, that one, there was something just about that one that did what Jaws does. You don't see the werewolf very much. It goes on about very they focus more on.
Did
about
you just segue to American Werewolf in London? Is that what you just did?
No, I didn't.
Or are we still on Silver Bullet?
I'm still on Silver Bullet.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure, because you said American Werewolf in London and you threw me off.
No, I said that if you wanted to see a really good, well-done werewolf, it's that one.
I'm back on track. I got you.
Because that one's a beautiful, just like a piece of art werewolf right there.
Sure, absolutely.
Rick Baker, totally. Mm-hmm. So that one really got to me. I don't know what it was. I think it has a lot to do with just like how it's very much like Jaws, where you don't see the werewolf very much until it starts to become the end of the movie, and then you just don't understand what's happening. It just to have the kid Corey Haim playing the whole thing as a paraplegic added a level of fear to it that it wouldn't have had any other way. So it was just a great one. That one always affected me. And and then there is, as far as like another one that has an effect on me, though it has an effect on me as an adult more it does as a kid, because I saw it as closer to it being an adult. Mm. Lake Placid.
Really?
Yeah.
Wanted us to do that for Bad Movie Night for a while. I mean, we need to do that. But why Lake Placid? The crocodile one, right? That's the crocodile one.
Yeah, it's a crocodile one. So mm-hmm. I actually love the movie. I think the movie is a great movie. As a Floridian, I find alligators and crocodiles to be a mistake on life.
That's funny.
They shouldn't be allowed to live, as far as I'm concerned. Sure. And to see one in a movie that gets to the size of a bus is just not right. And I remember, like, we went to go see that in the theater, and at the last scene in the movie when they're driving the one that survives away on a flatbed truck, and it's all taped up and everything, and we all kind of like looked at each other and said, "Can you imagine being on I-75 and all of a sudden that pulls up next to you?" I was like, no, I would die. I would just, it wouldn't happen. There'd be some way for that thing to break free from its tie downs and it would kill me. And when I say flatbed truck, it was a semi with a flatbed trailer on it to pull that thing along. So no.
And I know it's tough when you're talking beasts and predators. I mean, sometimes it's easy to just run full course into monster movies, but I think werewolves would count for sure.
Yeah,
it's kind of a dog. I mean, and it's definitely a predator. So, mm-hmm. You know, you were talking American Werewolf in London and Silver Bullet. Thanks. You mentioned that one. So that saved me some trouble. That's definitely would make my list. But I will tell you, I don't find The Howling to be a terrifying movie overall, but I find the transformation scene one of the scariest things I ever watched. The transformation.
I would agree with that.
Where Dee Wallace is trapped in the room as he transforms into a werewolf and for some reason never runs. I don't understand the logic there. Scared in place, I guess, is what we can go with. But it's a good, what would you say, man? A 2-minute scene? 3-minute scene? I mean, it's
it feels long. It feels that long. I don't know if it actually is, but it does feel like it takes a while.
And she's facing, I think Eddie was the character's name, and she's just facing him as he begins his transformation, and his face starts bubbling, and then his fingers start growing, and it's not the American Werewolf in London level transformation, but I am far more scared in that scene than I am in American Werewolf in London. I feel like American Werewolf in London is more art, like you said, art coming to life. This in The Howling was more of, This is absolutely the worst scenario I could picture in my head if I ran into a werewolf. Like, she is trapped. She's also kind of scared shitless. She doesn't know what to do. And she's watching this transformation and it's just horrific. Absolutely horrific.
I just looked it up and it's 6 minutes and 15 seconds.
There. That's it's my God. Find it on YouTube, scene. Man. If you've never seen it, find it on YouTube. I don't think that the movie's great, but I think that scene is.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's a funny situation because if you think both about the transformation of an American Werewolf in London and think about this transformation, they're not short.
No,
it takes a while. And so for like American Werewolf in London, I think about the fact that there's this guy who's transforming in a London flat, and not one person calls the police.
I mean, all he's doing the whole time is screaming and everything else.
Not insane. One person. They always say about how, like, you know, you live in New York, no one's going to call the police if anything happens. Everyone minds their own business. But apparently it happens in London also.
Speaking of werewolves, wow. I do want to give a little shout out to, I have to, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Because I feel like, I do.
Okay.
We almost
because
made
I feel
it.
Like they had this one episode that was really, really great where there were multiple werewolves, and they captured for me the essence of losing humanity in that transformation, and how someone you love and care about or see in a positive way can go from being that person to turning into a complete, I mean, just an animal, a beast, like a vicious killer who has no sense of humanity, and it just completely leaves their body. And it starts to make you question, like, you know, the existence of a conscience and your soul and all of that. And that really captured it in a way that I feel like a lot of movies haven't.
Fair point. But this transformation was a lot scarier.
Sure.
Also, I want to mention The Thing. I don't think you can talk about beasts and predators without mentioning The Thing because, I mean, it consumes you. It's kind of like Alien. It gets in your body and you don't know who's got it. You know, that sort of thing. So it definitely just is a terrifying idea. Arachnophobia. I don't get the eight-legged freaks, but I wasn't however old you were when you watched it. So maybe it made more sense then. But arachnophobia really got under my skin. And it's funny. Like, it's actually a horror comedy. There's a lot of funny in there. But it's just the idea of these spiders that just get me.
I've seen a brown recluse chase a man down. And so to see a whole bunch of spiders. Yes.
Real life?
Yes. It happens in real life where a brown recluse will actually chase somebody down. They're a pretty aggressive spider.
This is literally transforming my body right now into being like paralyzed in terror. Was this in your horrible times where you had maids and stuff, Johnny?
Yes.
Okay. Just curious. I want to make sure it wasn't in America.
Okay. We have brown recluse in the States too.
Don't tell me that.
So back to arachnophobia.
Especially in Texas.
No.
Fantastic film. Everybody should see it if you haven't seen it before. It's a great one. Now the one that terrified me as a kid, that isn't a great movie, but it terrified me, is there's a movie called Venom. It's not Tom Hardy. It's from 1981, and it's like Klaus Kinski and Oliver Reed, and it's a bunch of terrorists like kidnap a kid, and they get trapped in a house, and then there's an extremely venomous snake in the house, and one by one, systematically, the snake is taking them out. It sounds ridiculous. I was terrified, because the way that the characters die and whatnot is just really kind of horrifying. So I, for whatever reason as a kid, that made me really not like snakes. I wasn't afraid of them, but I was afraid of that one. You know what I mean? So yeah, that was one that really, really stood out. I would also, you know, Pumpkinhead, I don't know if that counts. That's probably somewhere in the middle between Monster.
It's in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll say it counts enough.
Okay. All right, so any stories of you and your friends being traumatized by beast or predator movies? And it is tough because you don't want to go too far into monster territory. Otherwise, we're at Pan's Labyrinth or something. What about trauma? Any trauma?
You know, the one that always sticks with me, and I don't know if I told this story before or not, but so one Halloween, my brother and I are watching the old school Universal monster movies. Dracula, Frankenstein, it ends with Wolfman, the black and whites. And after Wolfman, we get into what looks to me in my childhood brain as a like a real news production. And they're talking about how in all these different parts of Panama, there's been infestations of werewolves. And, you know, they're interspersing scenes from actual horror movies that I have seen of werewolves, which I was like, okay, that's fine. I know that that's, they're just using that because they don't have any images of it. But occasionally they throw in something a little bit different that looks like something I haven't seen before. So I'm getting a little bit worried. And as this whole thing keeps going, they're talking about werewolves attacking students and going to the colleges and the high schools. And, you know, it starts becoming something really believable to me. Where, and our house was like, you know, sure, it was in a neighborhood, it was fine, but my backyard was a rainforest, and sometimes at night it would get a little bit scary back there. So ever since this whole news story would happen, for at least a month, I'd be sitting there staring into the woods looking for some freaking werewolf to jump out of nowhere, and it really just bothered me. Finally, my brother, like, well, when he figured out what I was doing, decided to take pity on me for once, as opposed to finding more ways to torture me. And he said, hey, you know, at the end of that whole thing, it said they wasn't real, right? And I was like, it did, because I had ran off to bed not to hide. and he said, yeah, it said it wasn't real. So it was just all a show. And I'm like, okay, great. And it kind of helped me relax, because my brother at the time would have never have done anything so nice as to let me off the hook like that. But yeah, that's what I think about when I think about something as a kid of a, you know, predator that traumatized me.
That'll do it. How about you, Amanda?
So I didn't have a personal story of being like truly traumatized, but my girlfriend Priscilla had a story that I think a lot of people can resonate with, and this is where the Jurassic Park comes in. And so I'm just going to read her story that she had sent. I went to see Jurassic Park, The Lost World in 97 when I was 5 years old. The latter half of the movie has a T-Rex breaking free from a cargo ship and making her way downtown, walking fast through San Diego. There's a scene where she's in a family's backyard and even eats their dog. Poor children. Because kids are stupid, I left the theater convinced a T-Rex getting loose in the city was a real possibility. It traumatized me so much that I had nightmares at least once a week from age 5 to 12. This is the power of movies and cinema, you guys.
Wow.
I can't say that I had anything ever, even Eight-Legged Freaks, traumatize me with nightmares for that long. But I think this is kind of like the next generation's Jaws, if you will.
Wow.
They were vicious movies, though.
Sure. No, I remember as a kid watching my best friend, like I mentioned earlier. He's not really afraid of anything, but when we were younger, he was a little skittish about bugs, right? And I've always kind of been a little skittish about giant bugs, those giant bug movies and whatnot. I was stung like 130 times, so I'm petrified of bees, so I don't watch many bee movies. So, you know, like The Wicker Man terrifies me. But we were watching a movie called Them, which is not really scary in any way, shape, or form, but we were watching Them, and it's about giant ants, and they came out, and we were both trying to be very, very cool, and you just saw, if you were on the couch, like we each had a blanket and everything, watching Them, this old black and white movie about giant ants, and the more the ants came, the more we started going under the blankets, like each just covering up a little bit more with the blankets as it went. And it was pretty terrifying in a way, in a funny way, I guess. We also went and saw Friday the 13th 3, which I guess is kind of a Predator movie. And it was in 3D. And we hid behind the seats and we were screaming in the theater. And we were probably like the worst kids ever to be allowed in a theater because we were freaked the frack out. I swear he was coming from my head the whole time. Damn it, Jason. All right. So listener comments. We asked our listeners in our Facebook group and on Twitter. So what beasts or Predator movies really terrified you? And I guess we should talk about what we talked about, Prey, right? The Predator movie. That's a great movie. And it's nice to have a really anxiety amped Predator movie again. That was nice. It's on Hulu, if you didn't know.
So yeah, it definitely was nice to see that.
Yeah, it was really fun. Listener comments. We asked them that question. And first one, Josh Stima said he's got 3 points he wants to make of things that terrified him that were beasts or predators. One, those goddamn spiders from Arachnophobia. Two, the goddamn snake from Anaconda. I honestly used to jump from the futon into the hallway to avoid stepping near the edge in case anything was under it because everybody knows snakes hate hallways. What? Number three, there's a goddamn movie from, I think, the 90s, seeing a theme called Mosquito. And I do remember that movie and it was awful. But for whatever reason, those winged monstrosities got to me bad as a kid. All time, though, has to be the thing because of the anyone, anywhere, anytime aspect of the creature, right, or the dog from Bullethead because of the realism and plausibility. Great pick. Great picks. Brandon Smith asks Tim Predator or Beast, and he said Harvey Weinstein. Dun, 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 dun.
I love that answer. Hooks. That's a good answer.
Great answer.
Yeah, accurate. We're done with the podcast.
My last one is Becky Trumbo, who says the ones you can't see until it's too late, like Jaws, and the ones who don't have to run to catch you, like Michael Myers. Ooh, good breaking them apart. What do you guys got from listeners?
I got one from Andreas here. The creatures from Hellboy 1, Samael, the Desolate One, were creepy, but Jaws terrified me the most. I actually like the design of the Samael design, and that's totally the director doing it for us on that one.
That's Del Toro, right? Hellboy?
Yes.
Man, his new Monstrosities show, Curious Monstrosities show, that's coming out on Netflix in October. Looks great. It's going to be 4 nights, 2 episodes each night. Netflix is playing with some strategies.
Yeah, I can't wait. That's going to be great. Nate Bruce, the 1980 alligator movie where the kid got eaten in the pool, and you can't forget the bad movie night classic Zombievers and the bathroom scene. Both of those are great actual movies, and that 1980 alligator movie really had an effect on me
that's the one where the alligator is flushed down the toilet, right?
Yes.
It's like and survives, and then like 12 years later, it's the size of a freaking mammoth.
Yeah, because it survives because it's in the sewers of New York eating the
hormones
the
or something.
Yeah, it's eating the bodies of dogs that were euthanized and the chemical from the euthanization turn them into that giant thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then Zombievers, like you really can't, like all about Zombievers was pretty great. So I do love that. Dave McGrath says The Ghost in the Darkness is a great Predator film.
Fantastic.
That's even more terrifying because it was based on the true story. Do a Google search on the Savo Maneaters and prepare yourself to be horrified and amazed.
That's a great film. That is too unappreciated. Michael Douglas and Val Kilmer. And it's just, it's a fantastic film. Like, really is. Very smart.
Very well done. I absolutely adore that movie.
Amanda?
We've got Stuart Bannerman, who said Sark from Alias. We haven't had many TV show references, so I was glad to see some of that
in
there.
No, that's good. Yeah. Good one.
Brian Lowry said the Body Snatchers are the greatest predators out there. And
I guess I'd count. I mean, if you count the thing, I guess I would count. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then Wendy Davies said, don't know if this counts, but I class them as predators because they steal my fish and chips, the birds.
That would definitely count.
For sure.
Birds would definitely count.
Oh, I love that answer because they're terrifying in that movie.
Terrifying in real life. I hate birds.
I've actually
been targeted by birds. Have I ever told you this? Actually been targeted by birds. There were starlings. Do you know what starlings? Everybody know what starlings are? Garbage birds. They're garbage. I had up in the what do they call the? It's basically at the point under my roof at the point.
The soffit.
The soffit. Thank you. God, brain freeze. They were building a nest in there, right? They're building a nest, and they are very territorial. As those assholes do, very territorial birds. And so I climb up and I rip the nest down. Sorry, you didn't pay rent. Get out. And made sure that they couldn't go up there again. So for the next, and I'm not making this up, 2 weeks, literally the next 2 weeks, every single time I left my front door and walked out on my porch, starlings would fly at my head every day for 2 weeks.
I think what we learn here is that starlings have a memory of 2 weeks.
Roughly. But they were targeting me, man. I couldn't walk out that door without being attacked. And they were attacking me. Like, I had to cover my face and everything. They were coming for me. I mean, God, you little sons of bitches.
You deserve it.
I obviously did. I probably took out their little buddy. I don't know. There were no eggs or anything, so.
Yeah. If you came home and somebody had, like, evicted your child for you, what would you be doing? Partying?
Enjoying the quiet.
Yeah.
Mostly.
I thought that's where we were going to go with this.
Amanda, do you have any other ones?
I did not.
All right. Well, we are done with that topic. That was a fun topic. Thanks, everybody. I like that one. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn, or our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. And, of course, email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you want to say anything about the 500th episode, please, please do. You can rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @rjohndraws. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This. Troy at Troy Heinrichs and The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld with me, as well as I'm on Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. Last thing, we're out of here. How do you survive? We've got two scenarios. Are you ready?
Ready, Freddy.
Okay. First scenario, because it's beasts are the theme here. You're in beautiful Nassau, Bahamas, and a shark has been targeting your entire family because they do that when it's personal. Jaws Revenge? Anybody? Nobody? Okay.
Yep. Roaring shark.
All right. You're at sea about a half mile out with your two kids and the ship captain because, like an idiot, you decided to take a chance, and then your boat starts sinking. All of a sudden, you see a fin pop up. All you have on hand is a bucket of chum, a flare gun, a bottle of vodka, an endless supply of Bob Marley music, and for whatever reason, one item of your choice. How do you survive?
Okay, so because I'm pretty sure that you aren't going to let me have an actual gun to make this easier on me, my item of choice...
Do you think the gun would take a shark out?
Yes. My actual...
I kind of want to just give you a gun and then take you out in the ocean and see how this works.
Hey, look, ahead. You know, if I see a fin, I got enough coverage to be able to shoot the damn thing, especially
let's say no guns. Okay, agreed. No
okay,
guns.
But right. I was trying to help you out here.
I appreciate it. One item of your choice that's not a gun.
Okay, so my item of choice is going to be a C-3PO blow-up raft, so it's in the shape of C-3PO, right?
Okay.
And, like, because I sat there and I blew it up by...
We understand how blowing up works.
Yeah. So, I, you know, it's got me all over it. I'm going to tie a rope to it.
Why do I feel like this got so sexual? You had to do, like, the blowing sound to let us know you're capable of blowing.
You had to say the word. Now he's going to make it more sexual. John, just stay on target. Stay on target.
I'm trying to figure out how to make this more sexual.
No, don't.
So I'm going to tie the rope to the blow up doll, and with that, not the doll, but the raft. Now it's a doll. So
no, it started out a doll, and you're trying to make it a raft. Yeah.
So
I've always had a sexual fantasy about C-3PO. Is ultimately what I'm getting to.
So I'm going to take the bottle of vodka. And I'm going to tie that to the C-3PO raft, and I'm going to flip it out there into the path of the shark. And then I'm going to start jerking on the rope, because something's got to get jerked on, to make that C-3PO doll like shift and move around like a person, just enough to get the shark's attention, because it's thrashing about. And when that shark comes up to bite the C-3PO doll because it thinks it's a person, I'm going to shoot it in the face with a flare gun. And the vodka bottle is going to explode, and I'm going to sit there and say, "Smile, you son of a bitch!" And that's how I'm going to do it.
Perfect. Even though, interesting choice with C-3PO, but I think we're starting to see your inner psyche.
Well, I mean, it couldn't be a Barbie blow-up raft.
No, too late. You wanted a C-3PO blow-up doll is ultimately what I got out of this.
Well, and, I got to be able to fit the bottle someplace.
Oh, okay. Or, so,
Amanda, see what you
so
did?
What this I'm what
you
do.
Shouldn't have said anything, Amanda. This is on
I
you.
I know. It's right. All my fault. So I see the fin pop up, and I have a bucket of chum, a flare gun, a bottle of vodka, and an endless supply of Bob Marley music. Plus, mm-hmm. I have a little floaty. Like, I want the arm floaties. No, I want the one that is like a little donut. I want to sit in a donut. Okay, so okay. That's my item of choice. So I'm going to use the bucket of chum to distract the shark so that way my family can get away. And then I'm going to get its attention because I have like a little bit left. And I'm going to like try to toss it in its mouth like it's a dog. And at the same time, I'm going to put the bottle of vodka into its mouth and shoot it with the flare gun so it explodes its face and the guts go everywhere. And then I'm going to float on my cute little donut to survival with some Bob Marley music.
I like it. I think you might survive.
Thank you.
What about your kids and the captain? Are you just going
to
leave them
behind? No, they swam. Boat? I distracted the shark and they swam
away.
So
you get the floaty and the kids have to swim?
Yeah.
I'm doing all the hard work.
Oh my God.
The swimming for a kid is pretty hard work, I think.
Well, you know, we didn't say how old they are. They're teenagers.
Right. Okay.
All right. So I try to use chum. I mean, to lure the shark toward the boat. If they don't work, I will use the kids because the game is how do you survive, not how does your family survive. But okay. I'm hoping the chum gets it done. So once we lure the shark in, my item of choice is a big bag of weed gummies. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give shark these weed gummies, the whole bag. I'm just going to throw it in its mouth. It's going to be a big bag. I mean, the biggest bag we can find. And then I have to wait an hour, right? We got to wait an hour because it takes a while for that stuff to kick in. I hear. And in the meantime, I'm going to be playing a lot of Bob Marley music. I'm going to lull him to sleep to the point where he floats to the top. And then when he floats to the top and he's high as a kite, I'm going to douse him in vodka, shoot a flare gun, light him on fire, and he'll be too high to hide. So he'll just let himself burn because he's feeling so good.
How slow is this boat going down?
Pretty slow. It's apparently giving me at least an hour.
Like if the boat is sinking and you still have an hour to get a half mile back to an island, you fucked up, pal.
No, I did right. I'm good. Don't you worry about it. It works in my head.
Okay.
All right. Now the next one. You're on an African safari in Idris Elba's Beast theme. You're on an African safari driving through the jungle when a vicious lion suddenly attacks you and knocks your Jeep over. Big ass lion. You see a radio tower about 500 feet away to call for help and rescue, but you have a bad ankle, so you doubt you could outrun the lion. In the car, you have a tire iron, a coat hanger, a McDonald's quarter pounder, because you're gross, the Lion King soundtrack, and one additional item of your own choice. How do you survive?
Amanda. So, first of all, I'm going to take the tire off of the Jeep and put the quarter pound, like I'm going to get it a little enticed with the food, but I'm going to put the quarter pounder into the tire. You know how like there's that little section where it indents? And I'm going to put the quarter pounder in there and throw the tire down the hill so the lion chases it. And then ooh. I'm going to go hide in a bush and send my drone off, which coincidentally has my voice, a recording on it, so it can play through the speaker that says, "Help me, I'm located over here. Track my GPS." And it's going to play at the speaker to the rescue tower to call for help. I don't know enough about drones if this is legitimate, but this is what I found in my research.
Okay, I like it.
I really like the fact that you took the 10 minutes it takes to take the tires off the back of the Jeep.
But the lion's outside.
It does not take 10 minutes to take a tire off. I've done it before.
The back of the Jeep?
It's I was talking about the minute. Actual tire because it flipped on its side.
Well, it did knock the Jeep over, but you still have to take the tire off. It means you have to get out of the Jeep.
But you have to. All you have to do is have the little the thing to just get the lug nuts off real quick, and then just throw. The
have
tire.
You ever taken a tire off a Jeep?
I have. It's, well, it's maybe not off a Jeep.
A lot like you. Yeah.
Not off a Jeep specifically.
I'm gonna miss you.
Yeah.
Is it harder on a Jeep?
Is it easy on a car? It's not gonna be like
okay.
A
well, then
thing.
I'm gonna get the one on the back.
Either way, it's a bigger tire. Like it's gonna, you're gonna try to muscle. It's never mind. I'm
adrenaline, John.
That's adrenaline doesn't make a hard task faster. That's just not how adrenaline works.
But it makes your muscles better.
Oh my god,
you don't feel it.
Okay, so I've got a tire iron, a coat hanger, McDonald's quarter pounder, and a Lion King soundtrack. So what I do is I'm in the car. I'm freaking out. This lion's out there. Oh my gosh. What am I going to do? So I turn on the radio, play my Lion King soundtrack. Hakuna Matata. I want to relax a little bit. So
I forgot about this.
It. Yeah. Gotta have
music.
I didn't
even use a soundtrack.
You missed out.
Right.
And then I'm vibing a Hakuna Matata. I grab my cheeseburger, even though it's a little gross. I still ate it because I'm hungry and I know I'm going to need some energy for what's about to happen. And then what I do is I put down my tire iron. I put down my coat hanger and I grab my extra item of my own choice, which happens to be a satellite phone. And I call for help because why the frack am I going to go to the radio tower and risk my life?
That's why I sent my drone to do it. I wanted to just hang out.
I got a satellite phone.
Vibe to my Lion King soundtrack.
You're also trying to hop on a Jeep and take the tire off to roll it down the hill.
Maybe I'll just put the car in neutral and put the whole thing down there and leave the quarter pounder in there.
Your entire scenario is what happens in the opening 5 minutes of most horror movies.
Right.
I really just wanted to send something fast down a hill where it would chase after the meat. That's ultimately what I wanted to do.
Because the lion's hungry, he's starving, he's licking his lips, and he sees that rubber rolling down the hill, and he's like,
if you don't remember, I teased him, I taunted him with the food first, so that way he knows it's there, and then I tossed it in.
I forgot, I was too busy picturing your demise. All right, John, you're up.
All right, so... like you, I'm gonna start playing Hakuna Matata, and huh. I'm going to take this double quarter pounder of cheese, and I'm going to unravel the coat hanger, so that's a completely long piece of wire, and I'm going to stick it out the far side of the window, away from the radio tower, and kind of like use it as a way to get the cat's attention on that side of the car. And then as soon as I know I have his attention, I'm not really letting him have it just yet. Not ready letting him have it. I open up the side of the car next to me, mm-hmm. and I start making sure that I can actually move the door side to side so I can get out of the car. And then I open up the giant bag of catnip that I have, 2 pound bag.
Ooh, catnip.
And start sprinkling it all over inside the car, and I jump out the far side door. I bring the cat into the car with the cheeseburger and into the catnip, and I close the door. I use the tire iron to lock the door in place on the side I'm in, and I start hobbling my way to the radio tower as the cat's eating the quarter pounder and cheese and rubbing his face in all the catnip and having such a good time, and that's how I survive.
So in your version, it's just you just get him into the car, huh? You just ease him in there. No harm, no foul.
You ever see a cat on catnip?
I don't like cats, so no.
I don't like cats either, but a cat on catnip is actually kind of adorable.
If they're trying to eat your face and the catnip? Is that adorable?
Yeah, they're not actually trying to eat my face at that point. Once they smell the catnip, they can't control themselves. They don't. They go for
the
catnip.
Wouldn't you need bigger catnip?
It's a 2 pound bag of catnip.
Does it work the same for lions, though? I guess that's the question.
I really don't know, but a cat's a cat. If it fits, it sits.
if it fits, it sits.
All right, well, that's gonna do it for this particular episode. What the hell was that? But that was fun. Remember, next week is our 500th episode, and I hope you guys come back for that. Scott Clark and Brian Williams will be joining us. Troy will be here. It'll be all six of us, and it should be chaos. But what we're gonna do, we're not gonna do like we've done other episodes in the past. We're gonna play some games. We're just gonna have some fun and try to keep it light. So thanks everybody for listening. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
Bye-bye.
Our Boozy and Floozy 500.
Is that the title you want to give it?
Yeah. Boozy and Floozy 500.
I ain't drinking, so, you know.
Oh.
Is it because of a personal choice or because you made too many bad choices?
Why I'm not drinking?
Yeah.
You guys can't handle me drunk right now.
Oh.
It's one of those.
You guys can barely handle me sober. You're going to be able to try to handle me.
You drink beer. You can have a beer if you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get kind of weird. I get like really self-touchy.
You get weirder? Oh.
Yeah.
He's saying that it's going to turn into like a therapy thing, I think. Right?
That's true.
It sounds like he just said he was going to masturbate.